Hello, and welcome to another episode of There Can Only Be One. I'm Jeremy, as always, joined by my wonderful co-host.
Hello, Ben Wheeler here. How are you?
So we took a few weeks off. We were busy. We had a local Grand Prix. I floor judged that one.
I didn't attend, but I stayed at home rooting for the locals. And they all failed me horribly, Jeremy. A couple of them day two'd. No top eights, though, guys. Come on, let's pick it up.
Yeah, I mean, if I was playing, I would have top eighted.
But, fair enough.
Duty calls and all that. Yeah, it was a good time. We managed to get a sort of mini tournament there. We didn't quite get it sanctioned, but there were a bunch of us playing. We stirred up a lot of hype because people were like, "Oh, are you playing Commander?" And because we looked really organized, and we're like, "Oh boy, are we not ever?"
If there's one thing we're doing, it's not playing Commander.
Yeah. Let me tell you about this great format. I did this a lot of time in my judge shirt. I got asked a bunch to play Commander, because judges, apparently all they do is play Commander.
That's all they do.
And then I got to tell all these players about Canadian Highlander, and apparently a couple of them have been to YJ, and they said they'd email me to try and start it up.
Nice.
So I'm still waiting on that email. If you guys listen to this podcast, hit me up. So during the past 3 weeks, we had a bunch of stuff going on. We had the Highlander Championships,
mm-hmm.
which I miserably bombed out to. But I can say I only lost to the winner.
Well,
twice.
You lost to him twice.
Yeah.
Oof. And do you remember off the top of your head all the decks that people were playing?
I think so. So I was playing Scapeshift. Nelson was playing Bug Control. Josh was also playing Bug Control. Spencer was playing Junk Blade.
Robin was on Storm.
Yeah, Robin played Storm.
Colin on Red Deck Wins.
Colin played Red Deck Wins. Stefan Bard was on four color, no
four,
green tempo.
Four color mid range tempo.
Sure. And Alistair Howie won with Black Green Rock.
Surprise, surprise. Alistair Howie on the rock.
Yeah, this just in. Yeah, so I lost to him twice, Scapeshift against the Rock. I think it's a good matchup for Scapeshift, but didn't pan out that way.
That entire top eight doesn't seem like it's actually that great for the Rock.
No.
I mean, if he gets matched up against Spencer or Colin, then he's probably pretty happy. But even against something, like, if he's against Robin, that's got to be pretty miserable.
That definitely seems like the worst matchup for him.
Yeah, but even against something like you or the Bug decks, right? If the Bug decks have a pretty decent controlling hand, he just can't cast the Robin spells.
His deck with the Planeswalker setup and all of, like, the Howling Mine, one-sided Howling Mine effects are, like, super suited for the control matchup. I think he's, like, sacrificed points to his aggro matchups over the years.
They used
to be way more skewed, now I think he's definitely got more game against control than he used to.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's what I mean, though, is that, like, they're control decks that can play a Tarmogoyf on turn two, right?
Well, so can he.
True. But his Tarmogoyf is a glorified Wall of Blossoms.
What do you mean? All Tarmogoyfs are equal, Ben.
Wow.
That's like the definition of Tarmogoyf.
Okay, fair. No, but shoutouts to Alistair for beating everybody with the deck that he's been playing for approximately 28 years.
Yeah, mad props to him for just walking into the tournament. Everyone knew what he was going to play, and he just beat them with it anyways.
That's pretty classy.
Including me. So, get wrecked everyone else.
What'd you think about the deck decisions for the top eight as a whole?
I had them pretty close to pegged. I thought Scapeshift was a pretty good choice. I had some rough luck against Alistair, I think. But I think everyone made pretty solid choices.
They're all decks you can see these people playing at a Monday night.
Definitely. I think if anyone brought Cradlehoof, they would have ran over that top eight. Like, Cradlehoof was prime. All you had to do was dodge Robin.
And that, I mean, that matchup can also just be a coin flip at times. Like, you don't want to fight the Storm player, but if you do, and you win the die roll.
I think Storm's definitely favored.
Yeah.
But Trent, this last Monday, had pretty close games against Robin, and in game one, he turned through Rurik Thardim.
Yeah.
And then in games two and three, he said he was a turn off. So.
Yeah, that's just how that goes.
It's always a race, or sometimes you can cheat in the race by putting Rurik Thar into play.
He didn't even cheat. He just hit six mana on turn three.
Yeah.
He did it the very, like, fair way.
It's not like he natural ordered for Rurik Thar. He was just like, ramp, Rurik Thar.
Yeah, elf. Big dumb idiot baby, Rurik Thar.
Yeah, well, I mean, is he really the idiot baby? He seems like the idiot brother. Maybe idiot father.
He's got two heads. One of them can be the idiot baby, and the other can be the idiot dad.
Sure.
He's just an idiot. I mean, have you seen the guy?
Well, yeah, Gruul cards aren't known for their intelligence.
No, not the smartest in the bunch.
So, another thing happened this last Saturday. I didn't get to go, but you were there, I think.
I was there at the tail end, and I watched a bit of it.
Yeah, I watched some of the VODs, but Loading Ready Run had a big Highlander stream. They had a tournament there, and they streamed a bunch of matches. There was commentary.
They decided to go right up against Wizards running the Pro Tour.
Oh, yeah.
And ran their own Highlander stream, which was pretty funny. They got good viewers, too.
Yeah, we had solid numbers, almost 1,000 viewers.
Yeah.
I think, which was super awesome.
Considering it's Pro Tour.
Yeah,
right?
Considering it's being streamed at the same time as the Pro Tour.
Yeah, it's like, Pro Tour? Or 8-man Highlander Tour?
I mean, we also got shouted out on the Mothership.
Yeah, that's pretty spicy. That happened a couple of times.
Yeah,
that's
actually three times. Blake Rasmussen three times.
Oof.
Shout out to that guy. Keep shouting us out on the Mothership. Keep spreading the good word. This format's great.
Spreading the gospel of... I'm trying to think of some creature that could... Some legendary creature that could help define Highlander, but... Nothing's really jumping out.
Angus McKenzie sounds like he's the Highlander.
Yeah.
If
somebody...
got a Scottish name.
Yeah, if...
That's the closest I could come up
with.
Hey,
if our last Highlander champion is Scottish...
Brian Stoutarm, maybe?
Toss me! The LRR tournament, from what I saw, it was pretty cool. It was surprisingly diverse.
Yeah, I don't think there were any duplicate decks.
No, well, I think... I don't know what Pat... Oh, no, Pat James played Sandra Bullock.
Yeah, he played Rector.
Okay, yeah. I played him at the tournament, not in the tournament, and he was playing blue-red. But, I'm pretty sure it was just 8 individual decks, and unfortunately the event was won by local Storm player Bernie Nellis. And, folks, that's not representative... of representative? It's not a very good representation of Highlander. Bernie usually doesn't win.
This is true.
No.
In fact, that's the first ever Highlander tournament he's won.
Oh, just remind me. I've got a great bad beat story about Monday, past Monday, that involves Storm players.
Oh yeah,
is fantastic.
I heard this one.
So Storm won. It was great exposure for the format.
Yeah.
Just a bunch of people watching Storm just, like, poo on people, tapping out on turn three for things. And
well, I mean, that can happen, and people need to learn how to play against Storm.
Yeah, Bernie...
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, he also said that he was just running hot.
Yeah,
just like,
he was running hotter than the sun.
Yeah, it was pretty...
And if you're gonna run hot, that's a good deck to run hot with.
Yeah, I just saw him cast, like, an Anticipate on, like, turn three or something, and then just finds the Lotus. And it's like, oops, you needed.
Is this good?
Yeah, so... No, but other than that, like, there was, like, a ban. There was Alistair Norman, Alistair Howie, Pat Berdusco, Pat James...
Nelson...
Adam and Alex Stacey. Nelson,
yeah.
Adam, Alex,
yeah,
Stacey. Is that 8?
Yeah.
And that's like Bug Tempo, Band Control, The Rock, Storm, Blue Red Tempo, Sandra Bullock, Four Color Blood, and
Nothing was on a.
Yeah, he was on. He was on. Is it? I think that was it.
Yeah.
Anyways, it was diverse. Oh,
yeah,
Kiki Pod.
Yeah.
So that's like 8 different decks. That's
yeah.
That's pretty spicy.
Definitely.
And like some of those decks were more spiky than what those players usually play too. Spiky's not a good word. The other decks they play are still like very competitive. It's just they're more what you'd they're not what you'd expect when you sit down.
Yeah, like you don't typically expect Adam to play Bug Tempo.
He's joined the dark side now. He loves tempo.
I know.
He was just gushing about it. He was also gushing about it in the games.
By casting Gush.
That's my bad joke of the day. But he was also just like going on and on about how much like, oh, Shadow of Doubt feels so good just getting
Heart
people
is real
and
good.
Yeah. So
So I guess we should talk about the last 3 Mondays. Who won 3 weeks ago?
3 weeks ago, that would be Ben Wheeler with...
oh, wait, that's you.
That's me.
Oh, congrats, man.
Oh, thank you. That was with a Jeskai mid-range.
Who'd you beat in the finals?
I beat Jeremy White.
Oh, wait,
that's
me.
Oh, that's you.
Oh.
Whoops, congrats.
Damn it.
Well...
yeah, so we had a... 3 weeks ago, we had a hard-fought battle in the finals. I was on a blue-red tempo with Blood Moons and all the Getcha cards, Stifles. Ben was on Blue Red Midrange. He managed to out-dragon me. I have nothing that beats dragons in that deck.
And I have a lot of dragons.
And he resolved them. So then the following Monday, who won that one?
I believe that was by... the winner was Ben Wheeler.
Oh, you're right. That's you.
Yeah, that's me. With Jeskai Dragons.
Oh, wait. That's the same deck.
Yeah, that's the same one.
Oh, who'd you beat in the finals of that one?
Actually, who was it? Was it Noel?
I think it was Noel.
I believe it was Noel.
Who'd you beat in the second last round?
I believe that was Jeremy White.
Yeah. Yeah, so far in 2 weeks, Ben beat me in, like, the pseudo-finals. Or finals. 2 weeks in a row. He was my only loss in both of those tournaments. He won them both with his Jeskai Idiot Dragons deck.
Do-do-do-do.
And then this last week.
Yeah, well, this last week happened, and do you know who won this last week?
Jeremy White.
Oh, that's you.
You're right.
Oh, and do you know who you beat in the semis?
Ben Wheeler.
Oh, yeah, that's me.
It is.
Whoops. And what were you playing on Monday?
Esper can't possibly lose to Jeskai Midrange.
Yeah. At the time, I was, like, kind of tilted. Not necessarily because I lost. Like, out of all the people that I like, thought I should lose to, it's obviously going to be you.
Yeah.
Especially because it's the saltiest of runbacks.
All right, so this past... Short aside, these past 3 weeks, I've been on sort of a crusade to beat Ben. And I've been whispering into his ear all throughout the tournament that I'm coming for him soon.
It has made life so uncomfortable. It's like, I don't feel safe going into a matchup. And the worst part is, it's not even like... The whispering also made me just, like, scared to fight other people's guys. Like, I could be walking into, like, a great matchup
so Ben,
and just be on edge.
Ben won these 2 tournaments while being on tilt the whole time.
Yeah, no, I play the best Magic when I'm either on tilt or I haven't slept or a combination of the two.
Sounds like Trent.
Yeah, well, Trent's a bit of an extreme. Trent McIntyre, local scumbag. That guy can't play Magic unless he's slept under 4 hours, possibly had a wild night before.
Yeah.
Just
looks absolutely
just
haggard.
Yeah. But, no, so, like, I wasn't necessarily tilted at, like, obviously losing. It was just, like... In my head, I was like, not like this. Why did it have to be like this? Because Jeremy had the audacity to, like, time walk me, Snapcaster time walk me. And then just, like, the next game was just, like... Part of me was like, you know what? I bet he has Batterskull on hand. Like, he had a Stoneforge Mystic that found a Sword of Fire and Ice. And I was like, okay. I bet he's got Batterskull. And so I kill your Stoneforge, and you're like, respawn. I'm like, okay, yeah. And you're like, Batterskull. And then I knew I was dead. It was just like, all right, that's it.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're my only losses with this deck.
Yeah, I beat you once on a Thursday with my Aristocrats deck.
Yeah.
And then I beat you in...
yesterday.
Your last round.
Monday.
Yeah, this last Monday. You've been my only losses in Highlander for the past 3 weeks. And we've won all the tournaments.
Well, you know, Jer, there's a reason why we're sitting in front of this microphone. Oh, feels good to be king. Humble brags.
Yeah, so Ben's currently leading this year's QP race with 2. I'm falling slightly behind with 1.
And last humble brag, I believe if you'll go through the archives of this podcast, you'll find us, both of us, talking about this deck and building this deck.
Yeah.
As well as multiple occurrences of me saying, I think this is the best deck in the format. Or, like, the best deck that nobody
We both said that.
Yeah. Like,
then we did a live build of the Blue-Red Dragons mid-range deck.
We gave people off-duty.
We gave them the technology.
It's also worth noting that there's one other person that got onto the Jeskai bandwagon, John Kilby.
Oh, God.
Who, he won Thursday with it, and he's been doing pretty well, except for when he doesn't.
He's a ham sandwich.
He's a great ham. Well, no. John's a good guy. And he's made some great plays. But there are some times where you just need to go hard. Like, that's the biggest problem with these mid-range decks, right? Is you need to be, like, you're the aggressor and when you're controlling.
It's different than with tempo decks, because you can let some things resolve, and you can be like, okay, I have a bunch of removal in my deck. I can just kill that later. I don't need to counter it.
Yeah, and, like...
I need to get a threat in play.
Tempo, you have, like, 17, 16 counter spells or something ludicrous,
yeah,
right?
Think I was playing 9, maybe 10.
I was on 10. So,
yeah.
It's a different dynamic.
Exactly.
But, no, that's one thing that I would suggest to anybody going into playing these kind of decks... is that one of the more difficult aspects of the deck is recognizing when you need to just start
going
to the dome, really.
Yeah.
Just like, what?
Well, it's slightly different in with the red deck.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, when you need to shift gears, because giving your opponent too many draw steps is dangerous, and also sometimes trying to close out games before you have all the necessary resources to do so, and then you end up overextending or somehow allowing your opponent back into the game by tapping out.
Yeah, I mean, it can also just be difficult because you'll have draws and you'll have games where you're very aggressive, like where you have a very tempo-based hand.
Yeah.
And then you'll have games where you have a very controlling defensive hand.
Yeah.
And people will say, like, there are games like that, game A and game B. Right, but sometimes B just like slowly will turn into A.
Exactly.
Or it might just turn like that. Like you on a single turn, if you don't start aggressing, then you're going to lose.
Yeah.
Because if you keep playing defensive, you're just going to continue to fall behind, even if your card quality is so damn high.
Like that turn you draw Time Walk, you're like, attack with everything, and your opponent's like, oh, must have a Wrath, no blocks, and then you're like, Time Walk, and you just got in like 9 free damage.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was just free.
Like in the game that we had, where I think it was the double Time Walk game, where you had a True Name Nemesis with Sword of Feast and Famine.
Yeah, it was the double.
And time I had game. A True Name.
Yeah,
but I also had a Seeker of the Way.
Yeah,
and like it looks like I'm losing this race, but I'm clocking in like for 6.
Yeah,
and like gaining 3 life off my Seeker. But you're clocking in for 5, and then, like, I'm discarding cards every turn.
Yeah.
And it looks like I'm behind, but there is, like, I had, I think it was, like, 14 draws. 14 cards I could draw that if you don't have anything, I can kill you. And there's a lot of people that, like, a lot of times that you will try to plot out that thing, like, that series of events. And if you don't plot it out properly, you won't have that opportunity.
Well, yeah, you at least gave yourself to draw live if I had nothing. That, I mean, anytime you get Time Walk Snapcast or Time Walked On, it's going to be rough.
Yeah, it's not good.
Which it was. But you gave yourself a chance to win that game, which a lot of other people wouldn't have. They would have been like, oh, Time Walk Snapcast or Time Walk with True Name and Sword of Feast and Famine and Play. Goodbye.
Yeah.
I concede.
Got a block.
But you kept playing and you clawed your way back into the game and, like, as you say, gave yourself chances to win.
That's super important, especially for, like, a mid-range deck.
Yeah,
right?
you gotta play to your outs, because you put tons of good cards in your deck.
That's the biggest reason.
And the format's slowed down a bit, which we'll talk a bit more in-depth about in a minute. But that allows you to put more of these sort of high-power cards that can claw you back into the game. Like, I'm playing, like, Otter End, Vindicate, and Council's Judgment in my deck.
Yeah.
Which are super powerful and allow me to just... If a permanent is taking over the board against me, I can just get rid of it.
And then I imagine that my counterparts are stuff like... Well, the most direct counterpart I can think of is your Utter End is my Warleader's Helix.
Yeah.
Right? It's just this big, dumb spell that you look at and you're like, why are you playing this? This is just a more expensive version of this card, right? Like, Utter End is like, oh, why play this when I can play Vindicate or Abrupt Decay?
Yeah.
And then it's like, why play Warleader's Helix when you can play Lightning Helix?
Well,
or
our answer to that question is, we already are.
Yeah, exactly. You already are. You just
want
to double
more.
Up on, like, a more... Even if it costs much more,
yeah,
it's still a powerful effect.
Definitely. And since we've noticed the format slowing down, those powerful effects are something you need when people are casting Stormblood Dragons and there's more Planeswalkers hitting play.
And it's actually super exciting because it's a very good thing when you have slots for cards like Utter End and Warleader's Helix, because it doesn't always have to be those cards. It can be other, like, powerful but slightly expensive cards.
Exactly.
Like, for our particular builds, those are what I feel like are the correct options. Like, there are other cards that you can maybe shift in,
yeah,
but
like,
at that point in time.
Like, for instance, some of the new Confluence could see play. Like, I thought about playing both Wretched and Mystic Confluence in my deck.
Yeah.
They didn't make it in this time, but I'd definitely consider playing either of those. I don't know if you've considered Mystic Confluence for your deck. I've been really impressed when I've played that card in the past.
I don't own one. I've thought about playing it. I guess the big card that I've really wanted to play is being Reality Smasher.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's another dragon. Well, kinda.
Ground dragon.
It's a ground dragon.
Ground Vorix.
And, like, you're a three-color deck, but you play 9 cards that can add colorless mana. I think 9 lands, maybe 7 lands.
I think I play less, but...
Yeah,
like, I'm playing, like... Our mana bases are slightly different.
Yeah, I was on, like, 38 lands plus Mox.
Yeah,
so.
I played 2 less sources than you, but I also played less 5 drops. Shout out to my 5 drops secretly being 2 drops.
Oh,
Tasker,
yeah. Tasker, Tombstalker.
That card was so good for me.
I want to touch on Tombstalker. Not now, and spoiler alert, it'll be on the What the Heck Are We Playing segment, but I want to talk about that card.
Another card I want to talk about for a minute that was really good for me all day, and you're not playing it, is that 1 mana card. Myth Realized, that's the one. It's the number one card I got questions about when I posted my deck list on the Facebook page, and people were questioning whether it was really good because my instant sorcery count isn't that high. But this deck wants to grind. You're happy sitting there holding up a counterspell, and if they don't do anything you care about, just start pumping your Myth Realized and having an unwrathable... It costs 1 mana to activate.
Yeah, it's 1 mana. It's only 1 mana. But, I mean, it gets counters not just for instant sorcery, isn't it?
Oh, non-creatures.
Yeah.
So it triggers off Planeswalkers.
Well, how many creatures are you running?
22?
Okay. Because, yeah, I'm running 20 and then plus 2 land. So I think we're on the same non-creature, or close to the same non-creature count.
Yeah. But I'd really suggest, if you're gonna stick with Jeskai, to at least test it, because it was, I cast a turn one against Stefan Bard, and he was just like, oh no. Because it gets in under his counterspell, so it forces him to tap out at some point down the line, and then I can resolve another.
No, it's just like a ticking time bomb, right? It's
exactly.
Like a very aggressive, this isn't the most direct comparison, but it's like a very aggressive Ancestral Vision.
And it, yeah, and it single-handedly killed, I think, 3 Garrick's in the match against Alistair Howie, my match against Alistair Howie.
Oh.
He, like, didn't draw many of his naturalize effects, but...
I'll definitely consider playing him in the, ooh, that guy would go good in that's saved in the, again, for the what am I thinking about playing category. But no, that card goes into a lot more decks than I think it lets on.
That was the first time I'd played it in Highlander, and I've been super, super impressed with it so far.
It's weird, because when it came out, or, like, after it had came out and people had played it a bit, there were a handful of people, that were adamant about its strength in control, or in blue-white X decks, or even blue-white decks, right? Control decks or mid-range decks. But now, I just haven't seen it pop up.
Yeah, and it was one of those cards that I'd always wanted to play and hadn't necessarily found a spot for it. And it wasn't in my original build, but I was sort of the last chance deck construction. I was slipping through my cards and going through my big box of white cards. And I came across it and I was like, huh. Yeah, I'm going to play this card.
This card's live.
Instantly cut Serum Visions.
Oh. I can't...
That's the cut, Ben.
No.
That's the cut. Cuts your
I can't
in
cut.
Materialize.
It draws cards, Jeremy.
It draws one card.
I don't care.
You don't even get to look at cards first.
Oh, that doesn't matter.
It just draws
a
card.
In my defense, my card quality is so high that it doesn't matter what I'm drawing. I just care that I'm drawing anything and
but
setting up
it could
up
just
the
be
next
another quality card.
Okay, it's... You don't
threat
understand.
Density,
you don't understand.
Man. Threat density.
I got a problem. If it costs one and draws cards, I want it in my deck.
Oh, no.
Please. I'll even take it if it costs zero.
Well, if it costs zero, now we're... Are you playing Mishra's Bauble?
No,
thank
I
God.
Meant Visions.
Okay.
But if I were playing Mishra's Bauble, then I'd have a problem. That's going a little too deep.
Yes.
One card I want to... Well, probably the last one that I want to mention from this deck, because my lists have popped up a bunch on the Facebook page and all that stuff. To comment, to do a throwback to the LRR tournament. After the tournament, myself, Pat Berdusco, and Alistair Howie did a podcast with Alex Stacey called Tap Tap Concede, I think.
Yeah.
Was it? Yeah, we did an episode of that. It
Sweet.
Was essentially just like each of us talking about what deck we're playing and why we've been playing it nonstop, which included, like, ripping on Alistair for playing nothing but the Rock for forever, giving Pat really bad ideas for cards he should play.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent.
And, why did I mention that? There was something that had to do with that. Oh, man, I just lost track. What was I talking about before?
I don't know.
Okay, anyways, Wander... Oh, no, sorry, yeah, and the deck list will be posted on that. That's what I mean. So it's going to be... This list is
your deck
everywhere.
Is
going to
be everywhere.
Yeah, but the one card that kind of slides under the radar is Wandering Fumarole.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Blue-red manland. I feel so bad that I kind of... Like, in the set review I did with Adam...
That card's so good.
I barely touched on it. I was like, this is kind of neat. It does what blue-red's supposed to do. It's a blue-red dual land. Like, I've played Temple of Epiphany and Burn. Like, I'll play this card if I'm playing blue-red. But I wasn't going to play it. And then because I was brewing this list to ship to Stefan Bard for the top 8.
Yeah.
And him and I worked on a version with black, which ended up being the list he was playing. And he said, I put in this blue-red dual man land. And I was like, okay, you know, how is it? He's like, oh, it's so good. And I kind of went, I don't know. But I happened to have a copy, so I played it. That card is nuts.
Yeah, it's really
good.
It's
like the Planeswalker killer.
Yeah.
They just like, if they tap out or if they, like, it's, oh my god, it's...
It's value.
It's like a colonnade that very rarely hits, like, it's just a cheaper colonnade,
basically.
Which is insane.
Yeah, it's
yeah, anyway,
real good.
That card, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That, shout out to that card.
I loaned Pat James a bunch of red-blue cards for this Monday, and he didn't ask for it, but I brought it to him anyways. And I was like, I don't... Because I didn't think he had it. He doesn't have any standard cards. So I was like, hey, if you don't have this card and you're not planning on playing it, you should play it. He's like, all right.
Yeah.
He played it. I didn't get his review, because I was playing when he dropped off my cards, but...
It's a good one.
Yeah.
Play it if you're in blue-red, folks.
Definitely. So we're going to get on to the meat of this episode, which is how we talked a bunch about how we were able to do so well over this past almost month now. And we decided that it was our metagame analysis. Ben does the Monday metagame every week, which is where he jots down what deck everyone's playing and then makes a few notes on it.
And I promise I'm not doing it for strategic value.
Well, I mean...
it helps. Obviously.
There is strategic value, but he's posting it,
yeah,
so everyone has access to the strategic value.
Yeah, and mostly, if they're in match, I'll peek over and see what they're playing, and then I'll write it down for posting later. But if they're done their match, I'll be like, hey, what are you playing? Or, I ask, hey, do you mind if I ask what you're playing?
Yeah.
And they'll tell me, and it's like, okay, cool.
Yeah, he's not trying to...
I'm not trying to snipe
canvas
people.
His potential round two opponents and try and find out what they're playing. But the advantage of this is it allows you to sort of categorize the decks, which you've started doing, into like control, mid-range,
yeah,
aggro, just pretty loosely.
It's pretty rough, but
you can continue to do that. And if you continue to categorize the decks, you can get a pretty good idea of what the metagame is, like sort of like creature combo decks, tempo decks, pure aggro decks,
yeah,
mid-range
it's
decks,
like
control
based
decks.
Based into the, like the three standard categories of like combo, control, aggro. The combo, there are these subdivisions that aren't really noted, but if you look at it, you'll figure it out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Like, there's the combo, there's pure combo decks, and then there's the combo slash whatever. It could be the combo creature decks, the combo control decks. And then the control bracket, there's like hard control, tempo, the ramp kind of stack-y lists,
and
mid-range.
Yeah.
And then at the bottom, there's the mid-range decks. And then the pure aggro decks like Spencer's Four Color Bloodlist. You know, just the grimiest of the attack on turn one, I'm Spencer Sacklund. You know, that kind of list. He came to me after I posted the first one. He's like, don't you dare put me in that bracket again. Because I slid him in between like goblins and Naya aggro. He was really salty. Oh, but it was worth it, and I'll continue doing it.
Perfect.
But no, it's just like a quick glance. You get a couple of things from it, which, for me, it's been super exciting to do it, because, A, more data for this kind of format is great.
Yeah, definitely.
Where everybody's constantly changing, and there's kind of this little mind game, and it's so much fun.
Yeah.
And then there's also just the... You look at how many people are showing up, and I try to track how many different archetypes there are. And you'll have something like last Monday, we had 37 people and 28 different archetypes.
Yeah, exactly. And
that's
outstanding.
Insane.
The diversity there is so high. That's like 75% almost exactly.
Yeah, and you get in... There's like a file on the Facebook group with all of the Mondays. So you can look, like... There was a really interesting thing where one Monday there were zero red deck wins.
Yeah.
And I think one goblin list. Maybe zero. I'm not sure
if there
was
one goblin.
And then the next, and the week before there had been like four or five, like three red deck wins, two goblins. And then the week after that, there is again, three red deck wins and three goblins or something like that. Like it shot up died down because there were, like, people like you running around with green white life gain killer, like whatever you want to call that monstrosity you sleeved up. It was a good deck. It was a very good deck.
It was Absent Stoneblade.
Okay, fair.
But feed all the life gain.
Yeah, yeah. So you're not quite
straight. That was the week that Tim, what's that card called?
Earwig
squatted me.
So,
and he just looked through my deck, shaking his head.
Yeah, so like and knowing some of the people that played like red deck wins, and watching them go from playing red deck in a meta where there are a bunch of mid-range decks that have a lot of life gain, or a lot of Huntmaster of the Fells, or Siege Rhinos, or Kitchen Finks, and then slowly changing from that to one particular player who I'm not going to name names because I don't know if for sure that's what they did. Like, I believe...
Sure.
I don't know if this is exactly what their mindset was, but they played red deck wins in that meta with all the mid-range. Then the next day, next Monday, they played red-green aggro.
Yeah.
And it looked lower curve. And then they played a red-green aggro list that had a bit of a higher curve and had, like, Blood Moon in it. And then the final... And this week, they played red-blue with Blood Moon and, like, Pestermite. But it still seemed... I don't know if they had Kiki combo, but it still was, like, pretty aggressive. Like, Thata Adel was in there, Storm Chaser Mage, Flame Tongue Cavu. So, like, to see that evolution to go from, like, a super aggressive deck to one that's aggressive but a little more resilient.
And better against all the three-color midrange.
Exactly. And then, yeah, and then change it to be even better against those, and then just finally say, okay, I now know that this is all that's popping up. So
I'm
going to
beat these decks.
Yeah, exactly. So that's sick.
One thing I don't want to see on my Esper deck is Blood of Moon.
Mm.
Not good.
Not good. That said, I beat Pat James after he resolved a Blood Moon and a Ruination.
That was my Blood Moon.
I just had a token and I kept jumping it with Elspeth and he couldn't deal with it. I even had the misstep too. It was beautiful.
Oh boy. So the next thing you have to look at after you sort of get the raw data, look at the metagame report, is look back a couple and see if it's a stable metagame. See if you can see any trends. It's never going to be like the same decks every week, but there's often times where it'll be like five or six decks different, and that's when you can say, okay, I'm going to ignore the sort of outliers and just focus on what decks were the same.
Yeah.
And then that's the metagame you're going to try and attack.
Or if the number of like a certain kind of deck, like you can always bet on aggro showing up, right? That's just a given.
Depends. I've seen metagames where there's not being much aggro.
You can always bet on there being Llanowar Elves.
Sure.
Let's say that. You can always, like, that will always be a thing. So obviously show up with some kind of creature removal or a deck that doesn't care about creatures. But if you look, and I'll use the past couple of weeks as an example, the amount of combo decks in the format has slowly been creeping up.
Yep.
And so that's something that if you're going into, like, the next Monday, that's something you want to look at, right?
And this is especially relevant if you think your deck is already decent in the meta, but you should also be, even if you don't want to change decks, you should be tweaking your deck based on the metagame, which is something I don't think people do enough, is that they think they have the right 100 cards, and then they just keep playing it, and then they keep playing it, and they don't understand why they're losing.
Yeah, and it's not always like, oh, I didn't win with blue-red, time to buy Underground Sea, Badlands, blah, blah, and build into Grixis, right?
Exactly.
It can be like, Thata Adel didn't have a lot of Academy decks to pick on.
Or like, I lost to control decks, but I'm not playing things like Karanos or Course of Portal or like some Planeswalkers that I could be playing.
Yeah, these are pickups that are...
And I'm not playing any six drops.
They're like cheap pickups. And they're ones that you should probably have in your collection if you're looking to play those colors.
Exactly. Like, this is an Eternal format. If you want to play like competitively, you have to own
some of the cards. Yeah.
Like, and we're not saying you necessarily have to buy them right away, but if you're, like, going out to win the tournament every week, these are things you need to do. You need to have more than 100 cards for your deck. you need to be able to slot in Flame Slash and Mizzium Mortars and Roast if you think there's going to be a lot of aggro decks running around.
Yeah. All cards. Like the
using the same blue-red example.
Yeah, combined total of those cards is like, what, 250, too, or something?
Maybe.
Well, Roast is the most expensive of the cards, so there you go. That's an uncommon in Standard. That was an F&M promo, so...
Yeah.
Like, these are easy cards to find, to own, that you should own, and they will make a world of difference.
Exactly, and... And you just, it just takes some work, and this is what people like Ben and I do. We'll take an hour each week, look at the last metagame report, and see what kind of trends we can figure out and how we should alter our strategy going into the next tournament.
And don't be afraid to cut cards that seem powerful, or rather, cut cards that are, as a whole, more powerful than other cards. Like, I cut Misdirection. Which
yep.
It kind of just feels bad to do. But to me, having Flame Slash in my deck is just more important than Misdirection.
Well, that's the thing. You also have to understand when you... If you lose... If you even if you start losing games, why you lose those games. And sometimes your opponent just outplays you or your opponent draws better than you. You still win the match. Doesn't matter. But if you lose a game, you can often... draw some relevant pieces of information from that. You're like, oh, I drew spells, but the spells I drew didn't win me the game.
Yeah.
And then you can look at how your spells lined up against your opponents. If sometimes if it's a bad matchup, that's gonna happen. Like,
yeah,
tough. But if you think it's like a reasonable matchup and you drew lands and spells and you still lost, you should look at what spells you drew and why you still lost that game. Because if you think you're in a good matchup and you draw lands and spells and you cast all your spells, you either severely missequenced or you're probably misbuilt your deck.
Sometimes it's a combination of both.
Exactly.
I mean, realistically, we've all been there.
Yeah, and you just have to be like realistic with yourself, and if you're trying to get better, that's how you improve.
Be your harshest critic.
Yeah.
That's what I like. Even the tournaments that I won, I'll look at the games that I've dropped. Like, if I...
Well, I think this is going to be a really good example. I'm going to post all three of the decks that we've won with, and I'm going to try and... I'm going to maybe post the changes between your two decks.
Yeah.
Because there's, like, 10-card changes. You won the first week, and then you're like, yeah, wholesale changes, 10 cards.
Yeah, because there were matches where I won, and I just, like... I won... Sometimes I won off the back of the cards I cut, but to say, like, oh, I played these cards won me the match,
but it's...
I should keep these cards, right? That's, like, that's results-oriented,
but
right?
you could think that, like, oh, like, Thad Adel won me a match, but it's possible that Grizzly Bears would have won you that same match.
Yeah. Like, I cut, like, spoiler alert, I cut Monastery Swift Spear, which seems...
I like that cut.
You're not an
aggro deck.
I'm not an aggro deck, and...
Like, I think Mithrealized is just a way better one-drop than Swift Spear in our decks.
I also cut Grim Lavamancer, which seems iffy. I know. But...
I like that cut a lot
less.
My mana
was just, like, so tight in all the games. Sometimes Grim Lavamancer was just a 1-1 for 1 that ended up shocking something. Or it was a 1-1 for 1... that shocked them, which eventually would kill them, but it was, like, overkill by, like, 4 or something. You'll notice trends for the cards that were swapped, like, once Jeremy posts the list.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So they should be in the description below.
Yeah.
When you're listening to this. So the next thing you have to figure out once you've sort of noticed the metagame stable, you have an idea of what it's going to be, is how you want to attack it. And to some extent, you just have to have some knowledge of matchups and how they work. Like, Ben and I noticed recently that the format was slowing down. It was filled, like, a month or two ago, it was filled with, like, really low-to-the-ground tempo decks, low-to-the-ground aggro decks, fast combo decks. But then, sort of, just before the championships, people started playing more mid-range.
Four color blood took over for a bit.
Yeah, there was a lot of decks like relying on tutors, so which naturally just slows them down. Less fast combo decks, more sort of big decks, ramp decks, academy decks, big green decks.
Yeah.
And the aggro decks sort of started slowing down as well to combat this. They started playing bigger threats, weren't necessarily as fast, weren't as low to the ground.
A lot of the mono black decks and the mono white decks kind of fused and became like a lot of black white hate bears were popping up,
mm-hmm.
or junk hate bears.
Exactly. And so we both noticed at the same time, which is when we made the episode to play Jeskai Dragons. Ben then started playing Jeskai Dragons, and
yeah, if you ask me what's my favorite way to attack the meta, I'd probably say for 5 on turn 5. In the air, ideally. Whoosh! It's... Again, we mentioned it before. Kind of just notice these patterns, notice these trends, and don't always... Like, you don't have to be glued to that, right? Like,
no.
You can say this deck is good against that deck, but you don't want to sacrifice necessarily.
And the thing is,
everything.
You can't look too narrowly. You can't. You have to look at it sort of at a broad scheme, and you're never going to find a deck that's good against every single deck you notice. You just have to try and beat most of the field.
Yeah.
And I mean, winning any tournament that's more than 3 rounds, you have to get a bit lucky. With matchups and draws and everything. So, even if you think you analyze the metagame really well and you don't win, don't take it to heart. You could have just got unlucky. You might have made some play errors.
I am a sack.
So am I.
Yeah, well.
It's an attribute every great Magic player has.
Yep. Better lucky than good.
The Spencer Sacklin motto.
Oh, no. Spencer's motto is, Magic is... all skill, no luck, best wizard always wins. As he keeps a one land hand and perfectly rips into the right mana. Or rips into the Moxen.
Do you remember the Monday where I Inquisitioned you, took your only castable spell, saw 3, 4, and 5 drops, and you just ripped 3 lands in a row
yeah.
to cast all your spells on time?
Hey man, 39 lands, baby. Know your outs, folks, and always play more lands than you should. Keep loose, play tight. That's what I always say.
Build your decks right.
Yeah, build your deck right and build your deck right and play tight. And you can keep, then you can keep garbage hands like I do.
And then another thing to think about, this was your biggest point, is understanding your deck's weaknesses and sort of how to preempt them.
Yeah, this is... Because when... Even during the first week I was playing Jeskai, we had mentioned it, and the deck had popped up on Thursdays pretty frequently and had started to trickle into Mondays, and that's the blue-red... the Blue Moon decks.
Yeah.
So either the tempo decks or the mid-rangey control decks. All just blue... Good blue cards, good red cards, and... Blood Moon, Magus of the Moon, back to basics.
Get them.
Some of them have Ruination. All of them are
super
a pain to deal with. And I'm going to die to a Price of Progress. That's not something I'm going to try
nope.
to... I won't change who I am.
You have to pick your battles.
Yeah. So, if I got the counterspell, great. I'm not dying. But if they get me, they get me. Back to basics and Blood Moon, though, you have an option, right? You have ways, realistic ways of playing around that.
Yep.
And
you have to know your matchups.
Yep. And so I saw there was a lot of this Moon deck coming up. It was getting more popular, and it's only going to continue getting more popular because of the tools it got from the new set, from the metagame shift, making the mid-range decks, the 3-color decks, that the Blue Moon decks can prey on.
Yeah.
And
just being able to counter their relevant plays and slam a Blood Moon and then...
And people are just talking about it. There was a
yeah.
lot of discussion, and it's always a good deck to have in your back pocket.
Definitely.
And so, with my 3-color greedy deck, I think the first week I was playing 10 basics, 9 basics.
Yeah.
One of my first drafts had 12 or something ridiculous. And I ended up cutting it down. I went to, I think, 8 basics or 7.
Yeah, I think I'm playing 8, I think.
But still, you know, understand that you're going to die to price of progress. And you can't avoid that. Or you're going to die to price, but you might be able to avoid that, and you'll still just lose to it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, like,
right?
you fetching basics just ends up losing you the game because you're not able to cast your spells.
Yeah, or price only deals 2 damage, only costs 2 mana to deal 4 or 6.
Yeah.
It'll still probably kill you.
Yeah.
But back to basics and Blood Moon, you can play around that pretty safely.
Definitely.
If you, like, sequence properly, if you understand what kind of deck they're playing. And it's not at a huge sacrifice.
Some of the time. Like, you have draws where you just have to say, well, I hope you don't have it. But, like, the draws where you draw, like, Counterspell Liliana Brimaz, you're like, well, I need to get dual lands if I'm ever going to cast spells.
Yeah, you might need a filter land and a dual land, and you don't have time for basics.
Yeah, but if you have, like, the all-blue draw, which isn't that uncommon with these decks,
yeah,
you can, like, fetch a couple islands and then maybe try and get your other basics down the line.
And
cast most of your spells.
You don't actually need your... We talked about this in the deck tech episode. You don't need your threat on turn 3.
Definitely
and
not.
If it's going to cost you the game, then certainly don't go for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's sort of what we had for metagame analysis. If you have any questions pertaining to this, as always, email us. We're always happy to talk about it. We love talking about Highlander and how to get people and how to win tournaments.
We love to talk.
Yeah, that's why we have this podcast.
Yeah, that's true.
So now we're getting into our favorite section every week. What the heck are we playing?
Well, Jer, what the heck are you playing?
I'm playing Esper Midrange right now, Ben. What the heck are you playing?
Well, I'm probably just going to keep playing Jeskai Dragons.
Oh, perfect.
But
easy win.
But I can't stop thinking about Chris Sutherland's Grixis list that he won with a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
And I think I just want to take that deck, cut the Delver of Secrets.
Make it closer to, like, Arshel?
Yeah.
Add Thunderbolt Hellkite?
No, I didn't go that far yet. But
come on, man.
Mostly because it plays Fire Covenant, which is insane.
That card's really good.
Plays Toxic Deluge. I think that card's really good.
That card's pretty good.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And it plays Tombstalker. And there
that
aren't a
so
lot
good.
Of things. There are very few things that
Ben,
kill Tombstalker.
You know, you pay 5 for your dragons?
Yeah.
I pay 2 for mine.
Yeah, but my dragons attack the turn they come into play.
It doesn't matter. My opponent just concedes. You just paid a 2-mana 5/5 flyer? You still have Counterspell up?
Yeah, that guy just doesn't die.
Hell?
Like, I mean, we all knew that. Like, the Tombstalker. Because Tombstalker used to be a huge
and a
card
bunch of people
would.
I talked to a bunch of people when building this Esper deck. And they were like, isn't Gurmag Angler just better? And I was like, nope.
It doesn't fly.
Yep.
For starters.
I'm going to beat Ben. Need a flyer.
You're going to. That's. Flying. Man, flying is broken.
It's real
like,
good.
That's. I've had that thought so much this past couple of weeks, and it's probably the most, like, childish Magic the Gathering thought I've had in a while. Other than, like, wow, prime time is big. Like, it's just, like, flying is broken, dog.
Yeah. It's really good. Especially right now in the Highlander meta.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, no. Either I'm going to tinker with the Grixis list that Chris played, and either that or Jeskai. And
yeah.
I have Blue Moon built, but...
Yeah, so do I, but... Yeah.
Not yet.
Ain't no one got time
for
it. I
want to have more fun.
Yeah. Another deck I'm sort of toying with that I think is pretty good right now is Mardu Control.
Yeah.
I actually think that deck is pretty good at beating the other midrange decks. The removal it has is so good. So you just get to murder all their threats, and your threats are also really powerful. You can sometimes lose to yourself because you're not playing blue.
That'll happen. But
you have access to black disruption, some white disruption, and your removal spells are just nuts.
If you play low to the ground, too, you get Bob. You can play Phyrexian Arena. Like, even Coercive Portal if you want. Like,
yeah,
you have
Chandra,
ways. Chandra,
Siege,
you have
like,
ways of getting out.
You definitely do. I think that deck is as well positioned as it has ever been right now.
Soulfire Grandmaster plus Fire Covenant.
Yeah, I'm looking to that deck.
Oof. Yeah, I like that deck.
Anything else you want to talk about before we sign out?
I was thinking about playing Cradlehoof this upcoming week.
Yeah.
And I figured that an easy 10 points would be Natural Order Recall. So I thought about running Hoof with Natural Order Recall, and then
Beck?
Oh no. Well,
think about you have 7 mana. Play Beck, play Deranged Hermit. Draw 5.
Maybe. No, you're just tempting me with bad ideas.
Yeah, I just want to beat you.
No, but you get to play, or the other one was that you play Natio and Time Walk, because I'm addicted to Time Walk right
and
now.
And like Mana Vault or something?
Yeah, your last point can be G-Take, it could be whatever.
Ham sandwich.
You play, yeah, it could be a literal, and you know, in fact, if
so
I
So how
play,
long before we see this Tooth and Nail Critter Hoof Kiki Jiki?
Oh, it's coming soon. I was playing a couple of games with it on Cockatrice, and I didn't get to really kill somebody, but I did get to have the sick turn 1 Elf, turn 2 EOT Pestermite, turn 3 Natural Order my Elf for like Cradlehoof, or not Cradlehoof, Prime Time or something, and then they just conceded. And it was like, okay, that's fine.
Got him.
But no, it's the mana is so hard.
Yeah.
I don't know if I should just try, if I should try to hardcast Kiki Jiki or
no.
not. I don't think so, but.
No.
Part of me believes.
Alright. Well, with that, I think we're done for this episode, so we're going to do our shoutouts. Shout out to MTG Cast for hosting us. They're awesome. Check them out.
Mm-hmm.
We're on Twitter at Can Highlander. You can always email us if you have any questions for us about the podcast, about anything we talk about life itself.
What is the meaning of life?
CanadianHighlanderMTG@gmail.com. The meaning of life.
Yeah, and our website.
CanadianHighlander.wordpress.com, as always.
Yeah.
Looks way better than it used to.
And the Facebook group where Jeremy, myself, and plenty of other local degenerates and council members are always on there.
Yep.
Daily. Daily.
Hourly, even.
Bunch of deck lists, bunch of discussion, just... If you need a question answered right then and there, or if you just want to talk about this bad deck that you brewed, we've also brewed that bad deck, so feel free to ask.
Yeah. My catchphrase among the Highlander community is, I've got a list for that. And with that, this has been Dirk and Olimi 1. Later.
See ya.